This is Take My Turn, a podcast where two people swap songs and we find out if opposites attract or react. In this episode of Take My Tone, I'm joined by self-professed sports nut, freelance games writer and co-host of Mobile Arcade Club, Chris Button. Are you ready to trade tones?
I certainly am, Simon. I'm looking forward to it.
Very cool. Get the pocket-sized spiel on Mobile Arcade Club at the end of this episode. So we're going to kick it off with The Pitch. Okay, Chris, present thy tone.
Yeah, so the song that I've chosen is Bullet the Blue Sky by U2. And it's one that I'm pretty keen on and pretty keen to share.
And so what is there specifically about this song or this album? Because I see with the album it's come off of, it ties in with a recent anniversary for U2.
Indeed, yeah. So I was fortunate enough to see U2 in Adelaide just the week gone, where they were touring the Joshua Tree, the album, and playing the album in full. Because in 2017, they toured the US touring the Joshua Tree, the 1987 album, which is widely considered the album that really sort of put them into, you know, supergroup status and very popular in the US and that sort of thing. And I was thinking, you know, Joshua Tree, what song can I pick from that? And the first thing that popped into my mind was the opening track, Where the Streets Have No Name, which is just this, you know, awesome euphoric anthem from the album that, you know, I just, you know, chills every time I hear it. But I'll go for something that, you know, may not be as well known for people who may not follow U2 as closely, hence why I've gone for Bullet the Blue Sky, something that's, I think it's the fourth track of the album, if I remember correctly. So, yeah, something a little bit of a deeper cut, if you will.
Yeah, I'm stoked that you did, because I know not that much about U2. Of course, I know instantly, if you show me any of the band members, I can tell they're from U2. Everyone knows who Bono is. People know who the Edge is. There's, of course, all their hit singles, but I only recently discovered that they even had an album called The Joshua Tree because of the anniversary. So this is all new to me, even though this came out in the year that I was born. So, I was definitely quite intrigued when you said U2, because instantly the first thing that springs to mind with U2 for me is Beautiful Day.
Of course,
being their big hit from the early 2000s. But I'm glad that I had the chance to delve into an earlier part of their career, and not to give away my reactions, but definitely something that resonates with me more than their modern material.
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah, so just before I give my reactions, some song credits. Bullet the Blue Sky, written by U2 from the album Joshua Tree, 1987 Island Records. So let's hear a preview of this song. Jake was an angel, and the angel was overcome. Okay, Chris, are you ready to hear what I think?
Oh, I'm nervous, but lay it on me, Simon.
Okay, so as I said before, who doesn't know U2? You know, who at least doesn't know Bono? Everyone would recognize those shades, everything. Obviously, the tie-in with when the iPod launched and the inclusion of, Songs of Innocence on everyone's Apple device at the time and all that sort of stuff.
Whether you wanted it or not.
Exactly, and whether you could get rid of it or not. But who hasn't followed their music and has two thumbs? This guy. Because, I don't know. They've always been there, but because I've kind of put them in that stadium rock category, it's just something I don't normally go to. So, again, thanks for the chance for, you know, giving me the opportunity to a reason to check it out. So, first impressions, damn, that beat. Like from the get-go, it's got me at that beat. A drummer myself, I love a good beat. Upon the first listen, really digging this era of U2. It's something I've never experienced from them before. It's rawer, It's got a groove to it that I haven't really heard from them. But digging into the song a bit more, I love the opening reverby moaning guitar. It's really cool. It definitely gives it that desert feel that you pair that with the visuals for the photos from the album, and that it all ties in thematically. There's a very slinky groove to the bass riff, and I love a good bass riff, so I'm definitely vibing on that. And I think that rawness is probably just a result of me only really knowing their more modern stuff and more of that sort of high production stadium rock sound. So yeah, I was pleasantly surprised. All the elements are there. Like Bono sounds like Bono. He hits into his high bits, but there's a bit of gruff in this song, particularly around the spoken word section. I was like, ooh, Bono, calm down. Like it was cool. I liked it. I didn't expect that. The chorus for me as well, very simple, easy to remember. It's one of those things that I see the name of the song and I immediately sing the line in my head.
A very prominent hook, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Prominent hook. It's also quite a funky chorus as well. The riff change, essentially like a funk guitar line. And that bridge guitar solo is really cool, really textural. Because often people talk about the edge, and then the joke is there's nothing edgy about the edge is playing. And I'm like, hearing the stuff he does on this, yeah, he's not shredding, but he's just got this really cool vibe going on. As I said, the textural aspect and the way that he can emote with the stuff that he's playing, I think that is quite something quite special.
And it's quite apt you say emote as well, because I think as you say, a lot of criticism that the Edge cops from a lot of non-U2 fans is that he just uses delay pedals and lots of reverb and that sort of thing, which that is his signature sound. But as you say, with him emoting through the guitar, and I think Bullet the Blue Sky is probably a strong example of that, is that what he does with his solos, as you say, he's not shredding, he's not playing, you know, 50 notes a second or that sort of thing, but he does draw a great sense of rawness and emotion from the 80s and 90s albums when he's playing those solos, and with the various effects and delays that he uses, he does generate you can pretty well hear the guitar screaming with emotion, which is why I'm such a big fan of this song.
Yeah, and that definitely speaks to the music that I grew up on, where it was less of a, guitar technical mastery and more of a how can we approach the guitar as an instrument, particularly from like a rhythm approach, but by applying these effects and these textures and that just really bring out something different and add to a sound. So it might be like a particularly crunchy distortion that makes it really dark and messy, or a reverb that can really make it quite spacious. And I've always been drawn in by something that adds to the feel rather than just, oh, hey, this guy's going a million notes a minute, which is still cool. And I still do appreciate a good shred, but not every guitar needs to have a good shred.
Agreed, 100%, yeah.
So this spoken word section, lyrically, it's quite like dark poetry to me. So when he's, especially the line, I can see those fighter planes across the mud huts where the children sleep, and it really feels like he's, like Bono is digging into some confronting themes, but it's sort of worded in a way that still remains mysterious. So I'm not sure what your take is on the lyrics. I haven't delved into it too much, but it definitely seems there is much a war sort of theme, a military theme tied into it.
Definitely, and that's a bit of a recurring theme with Bono's lyricism, is that he is very, very anti-war and very, against warmongering nations and that sort of thing, which going back a few years earlier, there's U2's Sunday Bloody Sunday, which also, like Bullet the Blue Sky, has a very, very well recognisable and very signature militaristic drum beat. It is Bullet the Blue Sky specifically is very much an anti-war sort of song, and it's evolved over years through the live shows to represent messages that are important or topical to the time. So in the last decade, just off the top of my head, it's been used for, you know, gun control messages in our live shows, or what else it's been used for, you know, against, you know, warmongering, you know, presidents of the United States who shall not be named, just to, you know, leave it sort of open-ended there. So yeah, it always makes a very impactful and strong political statement when played live. And yeah, it's very much a case of, you know, people, you know, do not tolerate, you know, what the leaders of the world are doing in terms of creating this conflict and violence, to all these, you know, to all these people who are utterly defenseless.
Particularly when he ends the song on "Beyond Into the Arms of America," like it's a coming straight for them sort of scenario. And I guess just moving on into some dislikes for the song, possibly the spoken word bridge goes on a little longer than necessary, but I think I'm so taken back by that ever running beat and that bass that it doesn't really matter. You know, I think it was upon just first listen, I was like, okay, yeah, this part is, you know, I get it. Sort of going on for a little bit, but when I return to the song again, I'm just sort of grooving along so much. And then when you take in the sort of emotional weight of the lyrics, I it actually didn't become an issue for me. I think the decision to not return for a final chorus, I actually quite like that, because I like things that are unexpected in songs. But I think it also would have worked well to just hit back with one more chorus just after that ending line, you know, because it strips right down to pretty much just his voice. And that would have been the perfect opportunity to boom, you know, straight back into the, into that slinkiness and the bass and the funk. But as, you know, and we'll discuss one of the live performances, they kind of change it up anyway, the song structure. So it sort of doesn't really matter too much. I guess one other dislike is I often say that I'm hesitant about suddenly just really, really getting into a band's sound. So in this instance, U2's always been there. I've kind of heard some of their stuff, but this song I've definitely been more impressed by. But then at the same time, it's like I don't want to throw myself right into the band and then find out, oh, other songs around this time a bit samey, you know, like maybe you could enlighten me. Is the Joshua Tree more diverse, or are more of the songs running along this theme?
It is a really diverse album. I would say, cool. as far as the sound, Bullet the Blue Sky is by far the darkest and most distorted they get on the album, bar maybe I think the second and last track, Exit. That's also quite a dark and brooding sort of track, but there's a lot of variety, as I mentioned earlier about Where the Streets Have No Name. That's far more euphoric in its emotion and feeling. It's just got this big, you know, the signature edge delay sound. It's very, as you said, with the delays and reverbs, it's got a much more expansive sound, whereas Bullet the Blue Sky, yes, sounds much more haunting in comparison. So I would definitely, you know, if, you know, someone like yourself or anyone else listening who hasn't checked out the Joshua Tree, it is considered one of the great rock albums, you know, of all time. So I would recommend, you know, giving it a listen. There's certainly, and there's a lot of tracks on it that people might think, oh yeah, I know that song. Oh, I didn't know that was on that album, or that sort of thing. Songs like, you know, I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For, or With or Without You, and a lot of these tracks.
Oh, that's on that album.
Yeah, it is. So yeah, so there's a bit there, kind of say, yeah, some of their biggest and most notable tracks have come from that album.
Oh, wow. Funnily enough, I had so Movember at this time of recording has just finished up, and I had a guy that I know who is such a big fan of the Joshua Tree and U2 that he actually grew the the letter and the number U and 2 on each cheek. He, like, during Movember, his moustache, he had a moustache, and that expanded out to a U on one cheek and a 2 on the other, and it looks crazy.
Oh my goodness.
So I might have to send you a picture afterwards, but
yeah, please do. That sounds fantastic.
So overall, I mean, I am loving this song. I just, yeah, didn't want to wear out its welcome by kind of, yeah, discovering that, okay, maybe this particular sound, this darker, grittier sound was something that was either, you know, a bit rare for the band or something that was overplayed. So it sounds like it's definitely should be checking out the album at least.
Certainly. Would recommend it.
Awesome. Okay, so just quickly touch on this live video you sent me. Do you want to kind of give us a bit of a run through as to why you like this one so much?
Yes, certainly. So many, many years ago, when I got into U2, when I was in primary school, of all things, I tracked down a bunch of the live concert films that the band had put out, one of them being the Zoo TV tour filmed from their live show in Sydney in, I think, 94. I might have to double check that, but yeah, 94, I'm pretty sure, is when it was filmed. So this was following the release of their 91 album, Achtung Baby, which they've described as a sound of four men chopping down the Joshua tree. And their 1993 very alternative album, Zooropa, where they do some really interesting and sort of, yeah, bizarre things, which some people really dug and some people thought, oh, this is not the U2 I know and like. But so during this tour, they had a real sort of anti-capitalist, anti, you know, establishment sort of theme that they were going for. So that meant playing the Blue Sky on this tour was still very, very relevant and very, very key to the tour's theme and message. But what I particularly like about the performance that's on this concert film from Sydney is that it's probably the most distorted and the wildest version of the song that I can recall coming across. And the Edge just absolutely lets loose on the guitar with this really, as we've touched on before, this really emotive playing. And I think this live performance, out of all the ones that I've seen online and the one live performance I've been fortunate enough to see live myself, this by far is the strongest and the most emotive version that I've come across. So, yeah, it's one that I go back to on a pretty regular basis on YouTube when I'm looking to, you know, get some spine tingles.
It's pretty full on. It's a visual spectacle, huge screens, massive fiery crosses, and a very like dirty funky rock sound. And when the crosses changed to SWAT stickers, I was like, damn, that's gnarly. Like, it's pretty full on. And as you see, like, the Edge just gets to really expand upon his solo that's on the recording. It's kind of like more layered, it's even more emotional. And then when Bono reappears in that sort of military style getup, and he starts commanding the crowd with the claps,
yeah,
and it's kind of like, it's a really, everyone is so synchronized. And it's weird because he's saying his message, he's clapping along, so many people in the crowd, but he's kind of gyrating at the same time. So it's sort of like got that rock star sort of sexual vibe to it as well.
That was very much a thing during the time. He really, during the 90s, he really embodied that rock star lifestyle, which included the very, very tight leather pants and everything that comes with it.
Oh, brilliant. Okay, well, I think that's a good time to flip it over to The Counter Pitch. I present Lytone, Insomniatic Meat by Finch. So I chose this song because it introduces some good use of guitar noise. So I felt like that kind of complemented the noisy guitar and effects in your song. Finch are actually an American post-hardcore band from, I don't know if this is the way to say it, Temecula, which is only an hour and a half drive from Joshua Tree.
Oh, what a weird quirk of fate there.
Exactly. And so the album this is from, Say Hello to Sunshine, definitely threw all the standard post-hardcore tropes out the window. And to me, it's quite a wild and experimental album. This song in particular, it's noisy yet melodic, it's harsh yet fragile, but produced in a very lively and authentic way. I think it's a great use of Nate, the singer's cleans and his screams. Lyrically, it kind of really taps into this scenario of like constantly switching thought patterns as if it was written with the theme of insomnia in mind, like someone who hasn't slept for a long time. It kind of gets really dark and a lot of references to nightmares and darting all over the place. And a highlight for me is the backing vocals at the end of the song are really sublime. So before we hear what you think, some song credits. Insomniatic Meat, written by Finch, from the album Say Hello to Sunshine, copyright 2005, Drive Through and Geffen. So let's hear a preview of this song. Song has many different factors to it, which could become confusing, so I'll be interested to see what you think.
Yeah, so listening to Insomniatic Meat was quite the journey, actually. It was I found it a really interesting first listen. So just the first impressions that I noted down was the intro. I do quite like the intro because I'm a good fan of some distorted guitar scratching. When there's a bit of a moody build up to a song where someone's, you know, scratching on the guitar strings, especially when there's a bit of distortion added as well, it always intrigues me and it always hooks me in because I think, oh, okay, where's this going? Is this going to lead to something, you know, a big explosion of sound, you know, something really big and in your face, or is it going to slowly warp and distort into something a bit different? So that certainly dragged me in from my first listen. And I think following that intro with the guitar scratching, it didn't launch quite as heavily as I was expecting. Which is not to say that it's a bad thing. It just sort of, you know, subverted my expectations a little bit. But I did enjoy sort of following that intro, and throughout the song as well, I did enjoy the layering of the guitars and the different guitar sounds that Finch used throughout the song, which did create quite a few different sort of, you know, sounds and feels throughout Insomniatic Meat, which I did find that really, really interesting. One thing, when I'm listening to music, I tend to really focus on the instrumentation above the vocals. Especially when listening for the first time, I tend to struggle to pick out the lyrics above the noise of the rest of the song, which perhaps that's just me with some undiagnosed auditory processing sort of thing. I don't know, but that's just something that that I really find. So I sort of hear the vocals as another instrument, and then it's sort of afterwards I have to sort of either listen really closely on repeat listens or sort of look up the lyrics to sort of get a feel for the lyrical themes throughout the song. First impressions were really interesting.
What I really love about this album is that all the heavier parts and that go away from what standard post-hardcore bands were doing at the time. By their Finch's approach is essentially like heavy indie. Okay. On this album, like that's kind of like how I describe the guitar, like the way it's being, like sort of strummy style guitar, and the way it's produced it's got like, and the bass providing the low end, it's got this sort of chunky strum to it, but it's not necessarily like full on distorted guitar. And so that's kind of what I really like about, you've got this build up and you think, oh, is this going to explode into like a metal breakdown or something like that? And it kind of goes into this more strummy kind of feel that's got a low end, it's got heaviness, but it's not necessarily typical of what a post-hardcore band would do. And that's kind of like the interesting artistic decision that I like.
Yeah, and I think as part of that, with some of the guitar and the bass sound that was used, another thing I did like was that there were a number of pretty crunchy riffs throughout. Not not like sustaining the whole song, but I think, if memory serves, there was a bit of a crunchy riff that led into each chorus, which yeah. I did quite enjoy that. I do love me a good bit of crunch, so it's a sound I can get behind.
So between your breakfast cereal and your music, you love a good crunch.
Indeed, yes, yes. A bit of crunch, you know, in all aspects of life, never goes astray. So, yeah, but aside from that, another thing I appreciated with Insomniatic Meat was it felt like there was a really decent sense of progression throughout the song. I think this goes back to what you were saying, Simon, about Bullet the Blue Sky in terms of it skews sort of normal song conventions in terms of it's not necessarily just verse, chorus, verse, chorus, verse, chorus. It felt like Insomniatic Meat, there were a couple of bridges and a couple of breakdowns that were used to good effect to sort of keep things fresh throughout the song. It didn't really let it settle into a sustained rhythm throughout the entire song, which I really quite liked. I'm all for, you know, a catchy pop song or rock tune that, you know, is easy to hum along to and sort of, you know, is nice and easy to listen to and follows a standard verse-chorus structure. But I do like it when a song sort of progresses throughout its entire runtime. So I think Insomniatic Meat's about 4.5 minutes. And throughout that whole time, for most of it, it's doing something a little bit different for most of that. So I really thought that was cool. So
what about some dislikes?
Yeah, so dislikes, and this it feels a bit harsh of me because I didn't mind the song, but there are a couple of things that stood out that it just doesn't click with sort of the sort of sound that I enjoy listening to. So when it came to the vocals, I didn't mind the vocals for the most part, but when there's aspects of screaming to the vocals, I tend to be very, very fussy about what a particular scream sound I enjoy. Just to sort of add a bit of context to that, I really enjoy Queens of the Stone Age's music with a lot of their crunchy guitar riffs and that sort of thing. But the lead vocalist Josh Homme, or as he's known, Ginger Elvis, he very, very sparingly has this real gnarly growling scream that he uses sparingly to really good effect, and I do like that sound. Whereas here with Finch, I couldn't really put my finger on it or describe it sort of adequately, but just something about the particular scream used in Insomniatic Meat, it just didn't quite click with me. So
do you think it could be sort of because it lies around the mid to higher register where it's kind of like a bit raspier? Is that sort of...
Maybe, yeah.
I feel like a lot of those, like people like Josh Homme and that, if they get into a heavier vocal territory, it comes from more of a rock or stoner rock based background, whereas the approach for Finch and say a lot of other post-hardcore bands is a lot different. They tend to go into like a mid-higher register, and like I myself, I love a lot of metal, love a lot of heavy music, but I am also particular with the screaming. I don't like screaming where you can't understand it at all. I don't typically like black metal heavy vocals either, because they're super raspy and just kind of sound like someone's sort of choking on, I don't know, they've drank something, went down the wrong windpipe or something, I don't know. I can totally relate to that. So it's not, I don't take any offense or anything, because I know that I myself am quite picky with that sort of thing as well.
Yeah, yeah. And again, it's something I do find difficult to describe. And you may be right in terms of the particular register that is used, just didn't quite do it for me. But I think the vocals, aside from that, I quite enjoyed. But the other thing I didn't quite like about Insomniatic Meat was the outro, where I think, and I commend them for doing something a little bit different, but sort of the way that it really comes to the last half a minute comes to a sputtering end, you know, with the guitars, you know, this sputtering sound that closes out the song. On its own, in isolation, I thought, oh, didn't feel like the strongest way to end the song. But what I did was to check things out, and I on Spotify, I went and checked out the next song to see what the transition was, because I know that sometimes, you know, especially with concept albums, a lot of songs can sort of have a rather
segue and stuff.
A segue, or if they're played by themselves without the accompanying track, then it sort of sounds like a bit of an abrupt ending. But here, so I sussed out the next track, which Revelation Song, and just to see what the segue was. And I didn't think there was a super strong segue between one song to another, but again, and I think I have a greater appreciation for what Finch was trying to do with this track after what you mentioned about the perspective of, you know, someone who's, you know, having these you know, conflicting thoughts, you know, struggling with insomnia and lot of perhaps the mania that could come with that.
Totally understand that, because sometimes things sound like they're going to be a segue and they're not. And in this case, it's not really. What I like about the ending, though, as much as it is very sort of drawn out and a lot of repetition going on and the slowdown and everything, is I think keeping in mind that insomnia theme, it's almost like the racing thoughts of over and over and over again, and it's just breaking down into a slowdown, almost like someone's just eventually falling off to sleep sort of thing. It's quite quite a weird, you know, I love the strange approach to it, but I can see if you're thinking about it just from an ending perspective, it is quite a long and sort of drawn out ending.
I think as a concept song, I really think it's quite good in terms of you know, having that sort of interpretation sort of revealed to me. I've you know, immediately got a greater appreciation for how Insomniatic Meat is structured and its sound and that sort of thing. That's I'm pretty sure this is the first time I've actually actively sat down and listened to something from Finch. So this is pretty new to me. It reminded me of, you know, one band I'm a very big fan of is the UK sort of alternate rock trio Muse. One thing that I was reminded of is the particular sound sounded like their debut album, which I think it was 99. Yeah, I think it was 99, called Showbiz. And in that album, they were compared quite a lot of the time to Radiohead.
Of course, yeah.
Where they were, you know, they had a lot of, especially with Matt Bellamy's vocals and wailing guitar sounds, there was a lot of anguish and pain in sort of the sound of the songs that was on that Muse album. And I pick up a lot of that on Insomniatic Meat as well, with the vocals, especially before the screaming vocals, that there's a lot of, sounds like a lot of, you know, anguish coming through in this song. And that, again, going back to that, you know, insomnia interpretation, that makes a lot of sense. You know, if you haven't slept for goodness knows how long, you're gonna be in a fair amount of distress. So I found that an interesting comparison.
A lot of early releases, like Joshua Tree being an earlier release and the Muse reference, and this Finch one being their second album, it is usually the way that people are, bands, if they are in these sort of rock categories, have these sort of more anguished and raw emotions in their earlier material, and then as they go on, they kind of, I know, they either have less to be angry about, or they want to, they kind of like refine the production or whatever. But yeah, that is an interesting comparison, because similarly with Muse, I only really know their stuff from about, like, you know, the mid sort of career onwards. And so I've yet to even hear Showbiz, so another recommendation.
Yeah, so that's something that made I sort of made a bit of a connection to Insomniatic Meat there. So Okay, yeah, cool. No, it was an interesting listen, and yeah, interesting to listen to a few times on repeat to sort of gather my thoughts on the song.
Yeah, no worries. Well, I think that's a good time to flip it over to The Verdict. Okay, Chris, will you take my tone?
Oh, speaking of anguish, I really anguished over this one, actually. if it had been Limp Bizkit from last episode, I listened to last episode, really dug the Limp Bizkit track from last week, it would have been an emphatic hell yes. However, Insomniatic Meats, I certainly appreciate what Finch were going for here, and I think especially talking about it at greater length with you, Simon, I've got a great appreciation for the song, but it just didn't quite click with me. The sound just wasn't quite the sort of sound that really, really gelled with sort of my admittedly eclectic tastes. So I'm going to politely decline your tone, Simon.
That is absolutely fine, because what I like about having guests such as yourself coming on here is the willingness to explore all aspects of the song. So not just a straight up, nope, not my thing. We really quite dug into to different aspects of the song and got quite detailed with it. And that's essentially the aspect of the music discussion that I'm really chasing for this podcast. So yeah, I don't mind if someone doesn't take it as long as there's the reasoning behind it. And I think you certainly displayed that.
Yeah, and that's why I find Take My Tone to be such a fascinating format for discussion, I've really enjoyed discussing the two songs here today. And
no worries. So I suppose in turn you have a question to ask me.
I do indeed, Simon. Will you take my tone of Bullet the Blue Sky?
Well, I am really keen to check out the Joshua Tree. And so this era and style of U2 has piqued my interest. So yes, I will take your tone. I am prepared that this may be a one-off album scenario, but I'm actually happy with that. And so, yeah, thanks for giving me a reason to definitely appreciate U2 a lot more than I have in the past.
Ah, cool. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
No worries. So thanks, Chris, for coming on Take My Tone.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Now, I'm a big fan of Mobile Arcade Club, but for those who are wondering, could you tell us about your podcast?
Yeah, so very quickly, I co-host Mobile Arcade Club with my good friend Stephen Impson, which is a podcast about discussing cool mobile games, with a particular focus on those on the Apple Arcade subscription service.
Yes.
Yeah.
Given that I'm such a big Apple fan and fan of the fact that they're headed into these subscription services, it was an easy subscribe for me. So I think if anyone is wanting a podcast dedicating itself to mobile gaming, considering these new platforms that we now have, definitely check out Mobile Arcade Club. Chris, yourself, you're also a freelance writer. You've got a bit of a new website up. So want to tell us about that quickly?
Yeah, certainly. So you can find my work at thebuttonreview.com.au. So that just includes sort of my socials, my contact details to suss out my freelance writing in the games and tech industry. So yeah, feel free to suss out The Button Review if you're interested in that sort of writing.
Awesome. And I'll leave links to all of Chris's stuff on the Take My Tone website. Speaking of subscribing, you can actually subscribe to Take My Tone if you haven't already. Please leave a review in your podcast player if it allows you. You can follow the show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Just search Take My Tone. Everything is available at takemytone.com. So I encourage you to share and let people know if you too love you too, or if you take flight with Finch.
Smooth. I like it.
Now, lastly, Chris, I now personally thank you for delving into the 80s to give my podcast the edge it needed.
How long have you thought about this, Simon?
I wrote that one in about 2 minutes last night, so.
Nice, I appreciate it. It's good stuff.
Awesome, thanks again.
Thank you.